time once again for Community Forum. And we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Glenn Milner and Kathy George. Glenn Milner is with the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action, and Kathy George is a Seattle attorney working with the GZ Center. And they are both have both been involved with the GZ Center's lawsuit against the Navy and the second explosive handling wharf currently being built at the Bangor Trident nuclear submarine base in Kitsap, Canada, just 20 miles from where we're broadcasting. Glenn and Kathy, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
So let's start out. Glenn, tell us about the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action and kind of bring us up to the lawsuit that was decided on this just this last week.
Yeah, the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action was founded in 1977. The group's focus is the abolition of nuclear weapons through nonviolent direct action, and they're especially concerned with the Trident submarine base. The center is on 3.8 acres of land, has a beautiful house. It shares 330 feet of fence with the naval base at Bangor. That base, as you mentioned, is 20 miles from Seattle. It has its location of about 20% of our nation's nuclear weapons. There's about 1,000 nuclear warheads now deployed at Bangor. And I might as well go on to say the base has 8 Trident submarines. Each submarine presently is deployed with about 100 nuclear warheads. At sea, the submarines are on hair trigger alert, ready to launch on command. And as you mentioned, a new $715 million wharf is being built close to the existing wharf on the waterfront at Bangor for loading and unloading Trident missiles. The wharf consists of 1,250 pilings, and it covers 6.3 acres of water in Hood Canal. And the Navy, while withholding information regarding explosive safety, has doubled the amount of explosives handled in Hood Canal. The net explosive weight of the two wharves is equal to 7.4 million pounds of TNT in the form of rocket propellant in the missiles. The propellant is classified as a Class 1 Division 1 explosive. Is more volatile than TNT and is capable of detonating upon impact, and that was a big part of our case.
So what is the Navy's reason for needing a second explosive handling wharf there at Bangor, since they clearly already have one?
Well, they've given different explanations on this. The main one is they're in the middle of a life extension program for the missiles and for the warheads. They claim they need 400 operational days a year to pull the missiles, to modernize the missiles, to pull the warheads. Actually, the warheads are sent back to Pantex and they're modernized. So they claim that they don't have the facilities to handle this. I mean, they have been constantly upgrading the base all along since the late 90s. It seemed like the wharf may have been one of their last projects that they wanted to do, and they knew that for the wharf they'd have to do an environmental impact statement, which they didn't do for the other projects. The other projects, they do what's called an environmental assessment. They do their own analysis, and of course they'd pass their project.
Well, also, one of the things that we learned in the lawsuit is that the existing wharf is extremely vulnerable to an earthquake, and that the Navy is aware that an earthquake is likely to happen at some point in that area. So one of the concerns underlying this project for the Navy was we have to hurry up and build a second wharf because the existing one is vulnerable, and the pace of repairs continues to be very slow.
All right. So the Navy did an EIS for this project?
Yeah, in May 2009, the Navy announced it was conducting an EIS for the second wharf. In March 2012, it released the final EIS, and the record decision was filed May 2012. We filed our lawsuit in, soon after that, June 2012, Ground Zero, and actually Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility is the other plaintiff in the case.
So why did you file? Why did you, was the EIS not adequate, or did the EIS indicate something that concerned you?
Well, we knew about the explosive hazards all along, and during the, you know, during the scoping session, which was, you know, immediately started in 2009, during those sessions and review of the draft EIS, people brought up the issue of explosives. Actually, during these meetings, there were over 300 people, a good turnout from this area. 300 people, over 300, spoke against the wharf, and 30 of those people specifically talked about explosive hazards. And we know quite a bit about it. We know, you know, and it was surprising that the wharves were so close together. It was, and plus the fact that they refused to talk about it. You know, the Navy over and over said there's no new risk here in Hood Canal with this second wharf. There's, and the fact they even said there's no additional explosives in Hood Canal, which is, had to be false.
The environmental impact statement was a really large document, several inches thick, and the chapter on safety was the shortest. And as Glenn said, it was, pretty much just anecdotal. There was no scientific analysis of explosive risks or any detailed analysis in the EIS.
Yeah, well, the Appendix C is the was the one on explosive risk, and it was we found out later it consists of half a page of explanation and an arc map was all. That's the entire thing. And I mean, it looks like there was never even a, there doesn't even look like there was a risk analysis done by the Navy for the project, let alone, I mean, we thought it should be shared, but it looks like they never did one.
And an arc map is?
Well, it shows explosive safety quantity distance arcs. It shows the impact of an accident or the possible impacts of an accident at the wharf.
What?
It's essentially a blast zone.
Blast zone.
Yeah, it's a line on the map showing the area potentially affected by an accidental explosion.
Okay, and what's in? Can you describe what's included in that geographically? I mean, doesn't one of those nearly go across the water from where over Hood Canal from where the base is located?
Yeah, well, the largest arc is for inhabited buildings, and it goes. That particular arc goes to the property line, private property on the east side, and on the west side, yeah, across Hood Canal, it goes almost, I can't remember actually if it goes all the way across or a good portion of it.
And then the immediate, the smaller for, transportation, I believe, goes at least halfway across.
Yeah, it does. Now. Yeah, I mean, it should never even have been built there, the first one. I mean, there's no, it's a marine traffic zone, and there's supposed to be a separation from traffic areas.
Okay. So the Navy never actually even did a safety assessment at all on this, as far as we can tell?
Well, the Navy's position has been that the one page of analysis in the EIS was sufficient. The public analysis consisted of a statement that there's never been an accident,
the last 30 years.
Yeah, that the Navy will continue to follow the same safety procedures, and the EIS did state there is no increased danger from this project. The EIS also did state that the Navy was complying with all pertinent regulations. And we can talk about what we learned in the course of the lawsuit that seemed inconsistent with that.
Please do. Can you go into that?
Well, they specifically stated that they were following Department of Defense Explosive Safety Board regulations. They didn't, of course. In the end, the safety board wouldn't grant them a permit. They seem to rely a lot on the fact that in the 1970s, they drew maps of the base. The Department of Defense Explosive Safety Board reviewed them. It seemed, possibly there was some type of approval. I don't know, but they hadn't even designed the D-5 missile yet, so it's impossible for them to know how this thing was going to fit, and whether it would fit in the base. I mean, in reality, the base is too small to fit these activities. It's really about half the size of Kings Bay, the base at Kings Bay, and that one is even too small. They have a secretarial exemption at that base as well.
Well, when you're saying too small, expand on that. How do you know it's too small?
Well, the distance between the wharf should be 2,789 feet, according to their own the Navy safety standards and the Department of Defense Explosive Safety Board standards. And depending on how you measure it, it's, they're 200 to 300 feet apart. And strangely enough, there used to be a fragmentation barrier between them. The existing wharf had a fragmentation barrier that was about 120 large pilings it was built out of, and then it had a large structure on top. It's designed, if there was an accident at the first wharf, that it wouldn't spread or pieces of the submarine or missile would cause a detonation at anything adjacent to it. But for some reason in 2011, they removed it. And I spent the longest time studying this because it just seemed unbelievable. In fact, I thought, well, the Navy's going to sneak a new fragmentation barrier in later after the project's done because it's such a blatant error. But as far as I can tell, the Department of Defense Explosive Safety Board was never consulted on the fragmentation barrier. As far as I can tell, they have no plans of building a new one. Of course, that would have quite a large impact on Hood Canal as well, and it should have been in the EIS if they do that.
So the DOD Explosive Safety Board did not approve this. How did the Navy go ahead if they didn't get the approval?
Well, this is in the decision from Judge Layton. He mentions conditional site approval, which the Department of Defense Explosive Safety Board gave them a conditional site approval, I believe, in 2011. But it was, as it implies, it meant that they would get approval if they met certain conditions, and they didn't. The Explosive Safety Board asked them to prove that an explosion at one wharf would not cause an explosion at the other. And there were other issues in there as well. They also were concerned about the Delta Pier encroachment on that. There's a dockside handling building, I think. It was too close to that. But that was the main one, was to prove that the explosion at one wharf wouldn't cause an explosion at the other, and that the Navy really didn't deal with it very well. They seemed to kind of wait till the last minute. They actually, with about 2 days to spare, they gave themselves an exemption, which is called a secretarial certification. And what it means is the Secretary of the Navy will accept all responsibility for any accident at the wharf forever, for during construction and during operation. So for, the next 50 years or so, the Navy will take responsibility for something that was really the Explosive Safety Board's responsibility, and we get to live with it.
So talk more about the other things that you have discovered via the trial, the case, the lawsuit.
Well, I mean, I made a list, actually. This is unfair, but Should I just do that?
Sure.
I mean, I guess I'll try and go quickly through this. I made a list of things that came up as a result of the lawsuit and, you know, other ways during the lawsuit. The first was May 2009 when the Navy came. They announced the wharf, and they announced to Kitsap County all the jobs that were going to be created. And there were supposed to be 4,370 direct jobs and 1,970 indirect jobs. And it's in the final EIS, and they, you know, it's all through records. They had hoped this would win people over. In 2009, the economy wasn't very good. You know, of course, it still isn't. But it came out when they awarded the construction project. Skanska announced that it was really just 100 jobs on Inhoo Canal, and no one could really figure out where these jobs came from, where they came up with that.
So 100 jobs. The project is $700 plus million.
$715. Yeah, it's about $7 million a job. I mean, there's other jobs, of course. You know, with the, you know, the pilings are made and things like, you know. But for this region, there isn't a lot more than that.
Gotcha. I'm sorry. So continue.
Yeah. The explosive risk is one. You know, we talked about. You know, where the Navy said over and over, there's no new explosive risks. A bunch of records were released, and it shows actually the Navy is moving buildings and fortifying buildings, and they're paying $32 million to do this, to get them out of the blast areas of the second wharf. So it's obvious that there is a problem. I figured it out, it's like 4.5% of their project is to fortify and move other buildings, but they can't move the existing wharf. You know, they don't have room for that. You know, the other thing which we mentioned, that they complied with, Explosive Safety Board regulations. They didn't. Another is, as far as the issue of a safety review and the 115,000 pages that was released after the lawsuit was filed, there was no evidence of a safety review. They also said there's never been an accident in missile handling in the last 30 years, which is untrue. We know in November 2003, the Navy left a ladder and a loading tube and crushed the nose cone of a missile. The ladder went through the missile and... You know, we found out months later about that.
And that was at this facility, too.
Yeah, this, at the existing wharf.
And,
go ahead.
And my memory was none of the local emergency entities for the county or nearby cities were notified about that.
The director of emergency management for Kitsap County read about it in the newspaper like 3 months later, and she said that if it was serious, she thought they would have told her.
Okay.
The Navy also mentions that Kings Bay is very much like the base at Bangor, and they use that as an example that is, you know, they have a second wharf there, should be okay here. But, you know, like I said, the distances between those wharves is double. The base at Kings Bay is twice this. Well, it's 16,000 acres compared to 7,600 at Bangor. And also at Kings Bay, the waterway is closed off. At Bangor, it's a public waterway. Kings Bay has it closed off. Over and over, let's see, I'm getting close to the end here. Over and over, it's mentioned that these records are national security. That's not true at all. The records they're listed as unclassified or unclassified controlled nuclear information. In fact, I don't know of all the records whether there weren't many, if any, that were Exemption 1 under the FOIA. The other that I found really disappointing is the In Lieu Fee program seemed to me to be a fraud. The Navy gave $6.9 million to Hood Canal Coordinating Council to buy off responsibility for mediation. I mean, everyone knows that the second wharf will cause damage to Hood Canal. And so as a remedy, rather than do an on-site type of mitigation, they opted for this in-lieu fee program, which the Navy very much wanted to do this, where they basically, their responsibility is gone once they pass the check for $6.9 million to the Hood Canal Accordion Council. And their job then is to find projects for mitigation. And there's plenty of projects on the base that should have been used for mitigation. I mean, there's part of a marginal wharf that could have been removed. There's a magnetic silencing facility that's not used. But anyway, it's disappointing to discover that. Earthquake risk, Kathy mentioned, it's worse than previously known. And we came across some emails that seemed to indicate people working on the design weren't too sure. They seemed skeptical they could build a wharf to meet or to stand up in an earthquake. We couldn't really see any more in that. There's just kind of loose emails, but there is some skepticism about how well they could build a wharf.
Go ahead, Kathy. To just kind of put this in context, how these disclosures came out, the relevant law is the National Environmental Policy Act. That's what the suit was based on. And under NEPA, the whole purpose is to fully inform the public of the likely environmental impact so that the public has a chance to participate in the decision making. And it's also a dual purpose is that the agency decision makers are supposed to be fully informed of the possible environmental impacts. So when we, when Ground Zero filed its motion for preliminary injunction, which was more than a year ago in the fall of 2012, at that time, Ground Zero had nothing. The Navy had yet to file any administrative record with the court. So our original motion was just based on the EIS, basically, and the record of decision. In a NEPA case, typically the court rules require that the agency doing the EIS has to file every record that was considered at all by decision makers with the court within 2 months of filing the lawsuit. We were still getting the administrative record in August of 2013. So it took more than a year for the Navy to fully disclose all of the records that were part of the decision-making process. So what Ground Zero learned was very gradual. And ultimately, thousands of records were released in response to this lawsuit, which contained information that was not in the EIS.
And you believe should have been.
That was the theme of our case.
And I don't know how much you can go into this, but at one point, wasn't the Navy forthcoming with a lot of documents, and then they placed a gag order that you couldn't use them in the case?
Yeah, the gag order is still on some of the records. It's fairly confusing. Actually, yesterday I was going to send you a couple of records, and one of them I was spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out whether this was part of the gag order or not, and I just didn't send you anything. So they imposed the gag order right before the oral arguments. In fact, I think they imposed the gag order on a Friday. It was Labor Day weekend, so we were in court on Tuesday. We were scheduled to be on court on Tuesday, and they imposed the gag order right at the last minute. And basically what it meant was we couldn't use the records, we couldn't talk about them, and for the longest time, in fact, we still don't even know really what it means. I personally know if I violate it, I'll know soon. So try and be very careful. I'm sure. Very careful.
But it was information they had released.
They had released it. Yeah. Well, what happened is they had released it. And it proved our case. So we filed a brief using the records that they released to show that the Explosive Safety Board didn't approve the project, and that's when the gag order came after that.
Ultimately, the Navy re-released that information, however, which I think is why Glenn is saying it's a little confusing. Ultimately, the records were refiled with the court and contained nearly all the same information, with just a few redactions, and it's those few redactions that are still restricted.
Right.
Yeah.
But proves that the information is not classified. The information that we're seeking and that we wish to discuss through an EIS process was never classified.
And that seemed to be a lot of what Judge Layton was supporting was the Navy's claim that a lot of this information is classified and shouldn't be released to the public. And you were saying, I believe, that no, this information is already in the public hands.
Well, much of it was. Yeah, we knew a lot about the Trident missiles, the fact that one Trident missile is equal to 155,000 pounds of TNT. We knew the arc maps. This stuff has been released throughout the 70s and 80s, and even as late as probably 2003 or so, a lot of this information had been released.
I don't know if it came up in this particular case, but you have previously talked about explosive protection zones. Did that come up at all in this case? And can you tell us real quickly what those are?
Well, it didn't. That was discovered during the case. It didn't come from the Navy. It came from Department of Emergency Management for Kitsap County. But the EPZs, or protective zones, are radiological areas. And basically it just says if there's a radiological accident that people within these zones are supposed to I forget what it's called. I keep thinking it's called hunker down or something. You know, they're supposed to stay in place.
Whatever building they're in.
Run and get out of there as fast as you can. Those are the two things. And somehow you're supposed to know that. You're supposed to listen to some radio station that's going to tell you. But no one knows that exists anyway. But those are the EPCs. They're radiological zones. Emergency management knows about it, and evidently they're too fearful about the whole situation to tell anyone.
All right. Just over a minute left. The Ground Zero Center has got some events coming up that you wanted to let people know about?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say first as well, though, the lawsuit would not have been possible without Ground Zero, Ground Zero members, and other members of the public, like I say, who spoke. Over 300 spoke against the wharf. I don't feel I personally could do hardly anything that I do without the support of Ground Zero. There's several events. I should say too, our website is gzcenter.org. If you go to the website, there's the January Ground Zero newsletter. It's got good information in it. Leonard Iger has good article on a campaign to try and stop the replacement Trident submarines. It's a $100 billion project to replace the existing submarines at Bangor. So the event's coming up. January 12th, tomorrow, is the start of a peace walk led by the Nipponzan Mahoji Buddhist monks. And they're meeting in Tacoma tomorrow. They'll start in Olympia, and it ends at Ground Zero on January 17th. So it goes from the 12th to the 17th, a peace walk. January 18th, there's an all-day demonstration at Ground Zero and at the submarine base in commemoration of Martin Luther King Day. Monday, January 20th, is the annual Seattle Martin Luther King Jr. Rally and March, and it starts at Garfield High. Ground Zero, Lake Forest Park for Peace, and other groups will be there with a full-sized inflatable D-5 missile. Almost for quite a few years, we've carried it there in the march. The missile is 44 feet long, 6.5 feet in diameter. It won't weigh 130,000 pounds, and it won't have 155,000 pounds of TNT in it. It will be fairly safe to be around, and people are welcome to help us carry it.
All right. Well, unfortunately, with that, we are out of time. I want to thank you both for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thank you.